Good morning. Welcome to A Public Affair. I'm your host, Tish Buford. In studio today, we have a wonderful guest that I think you all will enjoy. This young man is very inspiring and is quite a leader, and he has a lot to share with you all this morning. And I am so honored to have Aaron Massey, and he is the head of the Justice Engage Student Initiative here in Colorado, working in conjunction with the GNS program. And we're going to get into initiatives that they're working on with the community that is addressing at-risk youths that are incarcerated, that are at risk for not being able to return to school to receive their high school diplomas, and those young men and women who are slipping through the system, who are not getting the services and support they need to restore, resume, and finish their education. So we're going to be talking about that among many other initiatives with JES and GSN this morning and with our guest here. So I would like to welcome the very, very inspiring and the wonderful Mr. Aaron Massey. Mr. Aaron Massey, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you. Thank you so much for the introduction. I'm doing well.
Well, it's an honor to have you. And you have quite a bit going on here with this initiative with JES and with GSN. So why don't we start out the conversation this morning by sharing what are your main goals behind JSS and how did it get started for you? And what was your personal journey into arriving and becoming a leader in this program?
Sure. So a few different things, right? So my journey here really is personal to me. So I grew up originally in East St. Louis, and it is both a place that is difficult to grow up in, but also you have so much love in the community. And my experience there was one of having friends who were involved with the justice system, or having friends that were murdered, really having this just deep passion to serve my community in a way that helped the most struggling students. These are kids who have made mistakes. These are kids who, you know, could use a bit of guidance, but they're still kids. So, you know, I am personally committed to making sure that, you know, these kids get an opportunity to see a future that they can kind of control and contribute to. So that's me as a person. The other side is, you know, I spent several years as a math teacher in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I've been a dean. I've been an assistant principal. I've opened a school in Baton Rouge and in St. Louis. I mean, I've been a principal here, a high school principal here in Denver as well. And that kind of professional side of the work as well is, again, running into students who have made mistakes in the past, and those mistakes dictating their future. And so, you know, I've been personally and professionally just committed to making sure that mistakes don't dictate kids' futures and that we support them in a way that is inspiring, but then supporting them in a way that supports their identity and supports who they are. You know, from an organization standpoint, Generation Schools partner with an organization called Turning Point in the City, right? And they were directly serving youth who had recently been incarcerated and then released. I'm talking about, you know, teaching, you know, tutoring them in biology, going over their transcripts, seeing if they're going to graduate on time, going over credits, like a very, you know, detailed, very, you know, supportive, direct, you know, kind of work that we were doing. And from that, what we saw is that there were a number of different loopholes that did not allow us to do our work sustainably. So, yes, we have a lot of examples of students who have, you know, matriculated into college or gotten to the military service. We have those examples. By and large, a large, vast majority of students that are engaged with the justice system don't actually get to graduate on time. They don't have the resources to check what schools that they can go to very easily. The parents don't have support and clarity around, can they enroll into school immediately or can they not? What school district will allow them to roll easily, right? So what we found in this work was a lot of organizations really not able to support parents in a way that parents felt like they were actually supporting. The other side of that work that we also kind of saw was that organizations and like full industries didn't talk. So that parole officer that has a lot of interactions with a student really wasn't talking to the education system. The judges that, you know, kind of hand down some of the judgments was not talking to the principal. And so, you know, Generation School and myself, we want to stand in that gap to say, how can we bring resources to this group? How can we clarify via Bill of Rights? How can we clarify the rights that students have? And then really the thought is, how can we also support the adults doing this work? This is not one of those things where we're adding extra burdens to teachers. We want to clarify what their work looks like. We want to clarify what how a principal can support a student once they are engaged in the justice system. And so this is not, you know, this is a personal and professional kind of passion of mine that I want to make sure that we are serving students. And then I also just want to learn from organizations on ways that we can come together to serve these students.
Absolutely. And I think that's spot on. And I know that the Generational School Networks and GES, the first steps you guys are taking in your partnership and collaboration is working with the students, of course, the families, the community, and based organizations on, you know, legality, policy, and also involving the media in a proactive but positive way, just like we're doing this morning, to get this message out. And but we also have to make sure, as you mentioned, the governmental agencies, we have to get the schools themselves involved. I was reading here, and this is a very disturbing number, but we had 60,000 kids here that were under the age of 18 who were incarcerated in Colorado. And then 10% of those children, those young adults, they were all arrested in 2021. And they were all under the age of 18. Mm-hmm. And they were able to take what would be, you know, their equivalent to getting a GED or going towards a high school diploma while they were either in juvenile detention or in jail. But if they were detained less than 40 days, which is often the case because they're usually not in there more than a month.
Exactly.
They're not automatically reinstated in school. So that was something that really jumped out to me that was so alarming. Now, can you expound on why these children are not able to go back to school?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're exactly right. Like at any given time, 6,300 students in the state of Colorado are engaged with the justice system, right? And what's interesting about that number is that these are children, again, and I'm going to keep on saying that because I want people to really understand the humanity of these students. So here's what happens. The example that you gave is exactly correct. So I spent an hour and a half interviewing students who were recently incarcerated and transitioning back to school. And that percentage of students that, you know, go on to graduate high school on time is around 20 to 25% total. That means 70 to 75% of these students are not graduating on time. And where do they go? Right? Like that. And that is the question that we have not yet been able to answer. So here are some of the reasons why students are not going back to school immediately. One, directly from the mouth of a student, he had been out of school. He had been out of incarceration for 3 weeks. And I said, how is school going? And he said, I'm not back yet. And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, I really just didn't know how to enroll. Right? Like that is how many students do we know that have been involved with the justice system that didn't get back to school because they simply did not know how to enroll? Right? We don't know that number. And that number is scary. The fact that we don't know where they are. There's a second reason as well. Let's say we do have a very strong-willed student that is really wanting to enroll. You know, they just got done, you know, kind of doing time. They're ready to go back to school. Well, they might not know which district they can go back to, or if they can go back, look back at their expulsion paperwork, or they will have to try to figure out, again, from their parent who also doesn't have the right resources. There's a third reason. And this reason is maybe sadder than the first reason. This reason is, well, because the school is not for them. That sounds very simple, but, you know, imagine getting incarcerated after a mistake and then going back to that same school that you were at. Maybe the teachers don't know exactly how to support you. The other adults, the administrators might not know how to exactly support you. But what about the students that, you know, maybe heard through the grapevine, everything is on social media, maybe heard through the grapevine that a student was involved, right? Like, it doesn't feel like a space that would support them. All of those three reasons, and I want to drive this home because this is very important to think about. All of those three reasons are at the intersection of race, of gender, of sexual orientation, where Black and brown students are disproportionately in these jails. Black and brown students are disproportionately suspended from school. Black and brown students are disproportionately excluded from school. So that includes expulsions and that type of work. And so this is at an intersection of students who were already struggling, already disenfranchised from school. And again, I want to make sure that people understand this. I am a former teacher. If you ask me what I do for a profession, I can give you my title, but I am still the same math teacher that taught in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I am still that former principal. And so like I have a lot of love and respect for teachers and principals. I'm not blaming them. I'm saying that they could use support and clarity around how to support students that have recently been incarcerated because things are different. I want to highlight that. Things are different. Students are different. And we should be learning from these students. And so, you know, we have some community meetings coming up where we are trying to learn not just about what other organizations are doing, because that's important as well, but we are trying to learn directly from students to say, what does it look like to support you in a real way? How can we get you to graduate on time? How can we get you to enroll as soon as you leave incarceration? And so there are a number of different reasons why students are not graduating or even enrolling on time. And it is our job as adults to listen to students as to why.
This is the thing that I think gets lost. You know, they could just go back to school anytime, you know, and people just put that on the student and they put that on the family. And to a certain degree, that's fine. But there's nobody there from the school system or from the government system to bridge that gap to show them how to correctly do this.
Mm-hmm.
And to give them counseling in reentering school. Because some people would say, well, you know, they've only been out 30 days. You know, how traumatic can that be? 2 hours in jail or a juvenile detention center is life-altering and traumatic. So can you imagine being as an underage teenager, young adult? It's unthinkable. And when children lose connection, we lose them. We lose them.
I think you're exactly right. And think about the comorbidity of this, right? So this is not just students that just made a mistake. I'm using that phrase because I want to make sure that we know that these are kids that have made mistakes. We all have made mistakes. These kids got caught. That's the only difference. We've all made mistakes. But think about the comorbidity of this. Think about the idea that there is somewhere, I think the number is around 70 or 80% of the students that are involved with the justice system also are disproportionately a connection to mental health issues. That are involved with the justice system are 3 times more likely to need an individualized education plan, the special education services. When we think about these groups of students, it's not just that, you know, a kid woke up and decided to make a mistake and that was it. And now they are, you know, involved with the justice system. These are kids that already had needs. These are kids who, you know, needed a certain bit of specialization already to get them kind of inculcated into the school environment. And when they are not, right, like that is where they begin to struggle. So to your point, imagine removing them completely from the social structures that they know, from all of their friends, from all of the mentors that they have in the community. Imagine removing them from the Black barber shops that they go to or the salons that they go to. Imagine removing them from the community centers that they go to. Imagine removing them from their friends that would have otherwise told them like, hey, actually, no, or like, hey, did you turn in that assignment? You're removing them completely away from every structure that they have of stability. And then saying, hey, now that you're, you know, no longer involved with the justice system, good luck. And again, one thing that's very important to note, too, again, I talk about these different intersections. Here's another intersection. We have a ton of families in Colorado whose first language is Spanish. But we do a lot of our work in English in schools. Well, imagine that mom that just wants support from her child whose first language is Spanish and has no clue of how to get support. That adds another layer of difficulty. And our jobs as adults is to be able to figure out structures and systems to make sure kids are supported. That's what we need to be doing and focused on as adults. It's not about getting shine. It's not about saying we did it first. It's about figuring out how can we be effective for kids who are struggling, for families who are struggling.
Absolutely. And you raised such a very good point. And I want to get into this more on the other side of our break here. But I do want to touch on the language barriers, the cultural barriers, DSS, Bill of Rights that you guys are working on. And I want to share the community meetings
that you guys have scheduled. People who are interested in getting involved and collaborating, they'll know where to go and how to get more information about GSN and JES. My name is Tish Buford. You are listening to Public Affair with our special guest, Andrew Massey here. And we're talking today about Interracial School Network and JES, about starting a Bill of Rights for students and advocating for those students who are displaced out of the school system and getting them re-entered and re-acclimated. So we're going to go back to our wonderful guest here. So, Aaron, can you tell us more about this Bill of Rights that JES and GSN are trying to work on?
Sure. So, like I said before, we really want to make sure that all adults that are involved with, you know, student-facing organizations, that includes, I would even say barbershops, those type of, right, those community foundations, we want to make sure that everyone knows their rights. Everyone is clear on how to contribute to the school ecosystem. And so a Bill of Rights for students that's been involved with the justice system would clarify for parents, hey, here's what you can do when you're in this situation. The goal is this. As soon as a kid has cuffs on their wrists, parents and that student should immediately know every single right that they have. They should know how to navigate the system from intake to the jail to exiting the jail to going to back to school, right? Like, parents and students should very clearly understand how to navigate this situation and how to get the kid back on track. Likewise, teachers should know clearly, how can I actually support this student? In what ways, what strategies will allow us to make sure that we allow the student to reach their full potential? And then administrators, as a principal, you know, how do I make sure I'm engaging the community, engaging the family to make sure that that transition from that incarceration to school is smooth? That's what a Bill of Rights will do. It will clarify and streamline. So then we can actually know how to effectively support students.
Absolutely. Now, do you feel at some point that this bill, if it gets enough collaborative community support, will eventually make it to the state capitol to potentially be official legal legislation one day?
First is, as a former community organizer and a teacher, right? Like, teachers are leaders in the community. I firmly believe that the community has to be the center of this work, right? Like, Generation Schools Network, we spend a lot of our time, our day-to-day work is partnering with teachers and school teams to say, how can we solve a problem with you? So we are going into schools and saying, hey, you know, let's analyze what's happening with your mental health services. Let's support those mental health services. Let's do some training to make sure that we know how to execute for students. And let's look back at the data to make sure that we're doing it right. So that's what we do on a day-to-day. We are now trying to come side by side, not just with schools now, but with the community to say, hey, we want to listen to you. We want you to lead this, and we want to be right next to you to support you along the way. And so, you know, if we can get some movement going, if we can, you know, make some space for the community to lead this effort, I have no doubt that we can make some real legal changes for the state of Colorado.
Because I think that's where we're falling short. Because a lot of this is ad hoc, honestly, flying by the seat of our pants, because we are always reacting to crisis. And when it comes to our children, unfortunately, especially after the 2 or 3 years we've been through, can you imagine being a teenager and going through puberty is hard enough, going through junior high and high school is hard enough, because that's a lot of social distinction and social identity that's created in those formative years that go on to really determine the rest of your adult life. And you add the escalated violence with political, social, economic issues, the isolation of the pandemic, our children and our future generations are never going to be the same. And when you say this is different, this is where the different comes in. Mm-hmm. Because we have all survived a worldwide once-in-a-century pandemic and still working through the emotional and psychological and physical collateral damage that has happened during this period. So I'm 53 years old, and I'm still traumatized by all of this. So could you imagine what it would be like to be a 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old kid trying to adjust with all that's going on top of the normal problems they have just existing being a teenage person.
That's exactly right. And I don't think people really reflect on the idea that for a year and some change, we stopped school completely. We gave kids laptops and we said, hey, let's do school again, but on your computer. But what we didn't do is say, hey, you know, school is here in a lot of different ways to socially grow you in a way where you learn how to interact through difference, learn how to push through difficult times. Well, once that stopped completely and school started back, we in education had an opportunity to say, let's do things differently. Let's address the needs that you have and let's make this system work for you. And we didn't do that. And again, I don't mean teachers. I don't mean principals. I'm talking about us as a whole collective of educators, us as a society. We decided go back to school, but change nothing. Well, kids are needing something right now. Here's a perfect example I can give you. As a high school principal, one of my, you know, highest performing students, she has, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in scholarships. She was already, you know, she has a full ride to the college of her choice. And the second week of school, she's crying profusely because one person made fun of her, right? This is a person who is, you know, very talented, very skilled, right, but struggling mentally on how to kind of navigate being back into an education structure. And so now more than ever, kids need support. Not just kids that's been involved with the justice system, but all kids need support. Now, then you add the layer of kids who are struggling in different ways, and now we have what I would argue is a crisis on our hand. Like, the time is now to support kids been involved with the justice system and who have not. The time is now. Education is a group activity. When you go in a classroom, it's not one or two students, it's 30. And all 30 of those students need something uniquely different to achieve kind of possibilities that they have in their head. And, you know, we can't do that if we don't be more honest about what's happening. And what's happening right now is kids need support. Kids need help. Adults need clarity. Adults need help on supporting these students.
They do. And honestly, I think people, and meaning young people, are scared to ask for help because they don't want to be judged. They don't want to be looked upon as having something wrong with them, are so afraid of being outed for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And with social media being such an invisible bully,
mm-hmm.
it is very easy for people to harass, mm-hmm. diminish, and destroy people and all people. And I firmly believe that this is part of the reason why suicides have skyrocketed over the last 3-4 years.
Yep. According to a certain general, suicides, mental health risks, anxiety, all have more than doubled in the last few years. Kids are dynamic people. They both are who they are now, as well as the potential that they can be in the future. And, but right, you know, schools are situated to think through who can kids be in the future. Schools are structured in a way to compete and to make sure that we're thinking long term down the line. But we have an issue now where who are kids right now, and they are struggling now. And, you know, your example of bullying is a perfect example that, you know, I try to highlight is back in the day, if we had a bully, they were at school and then we left and we didn't see them for several hours. We recovered and we built up some courage to stop that bully from bullying us. Now, kids are bullied at school. And then when they leave school, they're bullied via social media for hours on end and they come back to school and do it again. You know, that is a different formula. I'm a former math teacher. That's a different formula. Plus, it requires different variables. It requires different constants. It requires us to analyze the structure a bit differently than what we currently do.
It does. And the goal of Generation School Network through their educational nonprofit organization is to work, you know, and co-create, you know, healthy school ecosystems by partnering, as I mentioned earlier, you know, with educators, students, families, and communities, you know, to elevate the educational experience. And when people hear education, they just think academics. They don't think that the education and social should be intertwined or that they're mutually exclusive from each other when they're not. They're both very much intangible things that have to be connected. Because if you disassociate the social piece from the educational piece, you had that brilliant young lady who was in tears because she feels diminished over one comment. And that is something that we have to work on. You guys have community meetings coming up. And before we get out of here today, Aaron, can you give us some information about when those next meetings are scheduled and how people can get more information about GSN and JES if they want to get involved?
So let me give you locations, dates, times for the April community meetings. I'll tell you about ways that we can get connected with JESCO as well as GSN. So April 27th at Saban World Elementary School, 6 to 8 p.m. is dinner will be served. You know, I want to make sure we'll have some food for you as well. We will make sure that we have time to eat together and break bread together as a community. And then here's how we get involved. So two different websites you can go to. One is you can go to justengagestudents.org. And reach out directly. My contact information is on the website as well. You know, if you want to, my email is amassey@generationschools.org. You can reach out directly to me. I will have a conversation with you. I will learn from you. I will grow with you as well. So feel free to reach out directly that way.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. And thank you so much for your time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all for listening to A Public Affair. I've been your host, Tish Buford, KGNU Community Radio. Take care.